Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
I'd be very curious to see if anybody would ever experiment with panharmonicon in one of these humans decks.
I really miss the days of a glimpse of nature in this deck.
That's okay, we deal in facts here at the win condition.
Will I play this in a Naya Tokens deck? Yeah.
This opens the door wide up to speculation for the lore and story of Rivals of Ixalan. Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, where we talk all things Magic the Gathering. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm here with my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing good this morning.
Awesome. Well, we are in December. It's the holiday season.
Oh, gosh.
Time to get excited about Unstable. How has your week been going so far?
My week's been okay. Busy working. Took the day off yesterday so I could have a personal mental day.
Yep. Nice. Sanity days are pretty important every now and again.
They sure are.
Yep. Yeah, well, we're getting into our holiday schedule at work. Things are getting a little bit hectic, but they're paying out bonuses, which is good, right around the holidays, so I'm excited about that.
Getting a bonus next week because of my performance bonus. Yeah.
Awesome. You know where else you can get a bonus? At Flipside Gaming, at flipsidegaming.com, where if you order any Magic products, singles or sealed, other gaming products as well, if you order anything over $10, you use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, you will get a bonus 10% off of your purchase, which will help contribute to our future show giveaways. So hit them up at flipsidegaming.com. Order those Christmas presents and make everyone happy for the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Or make yourself happy. I mean,
absolutely. Get yourself sets of those unstable lands. You know, those things are looking pretty darn sweet.
They are very good looking.
Yeah.
Almost like a sharp dressed man.
Sure. All right. Well, Greg, we got a lot to talk about today. Very interesting. I can't wait to dive into it. So I'm going to take you directly into the spike pit. All right. So, Greg, here we are down in the spike pit. There's something going on January 5th through the 7th in Santa Clara. What is that event?
We have our very first Team Trio constructed event for the 25th anniversary year for Magic. Now, the reason why I say this is so important is because of the fact that at the end of the year, in August, we're going to have the 25th anniversary World Magic Cup. Now, the front runner to this format is going to be Team Trio Constructed. Now, so you ask, what does that mean to me, common guy Joe Schmo? Well, if you're going out to be playing in a team constructed event, these team trios, you're going to be facing pros because they're going to be playing because they want to be better for the Magic Cup.
Right.
Which means you can't wait. Go play test. Find your team. Play now. I mean, you're already months behind them.
And these Team Trio events, this one in particular, isn't going to be the unified standard event. Mm-hmm. It's going to be each of you picks a different format. There's Legacy, there's Modern, and there's Standard. So, like you were saying, get on it. If you want to find a team, you got to find somebody who's comfortable playing Legacy. That might be one of the harder ones to find, as Legacy isn't as prevalent as Modern or Standard, but that's not to say that you can't get into it.
Funny story that you bring up, Legacy is the hard one. Here in the Bay Area, I find nothing but Legacy and Modern players. Nobody plays Standard out here.
Interesting. Depends on where you live in the country. I know there's havens for, you know, Legacy and even Vintage all over the country and, well, in more specific areas. But, yeah, no, it's I would definitely say the barrier to entry for Legacy is greater than any other format. But yeah, go start looking for people to play test with. You know, I mean, all three formats are fun. I know standard seems to get a little stale every now and again, but modern is incredibly healthy. Legacy is incredibly diverse. Yeah, all formats are very fun, which is why we wanted to take some time today and go through and break down several of the most popular decks for each format. And by breakdown, I mean just briefly talk about, give you an idea of how they function, some of the key cards you will need for them, and how powerful they will be in their respective formats.
Mm-hmm.
So I think where we should start is we should go oldest first and work our way forward. So first, let's go ahead and take a look at the Legacy metagame. And all this information we're going to be referencing from mtgtop8.com. If you haven't gone there yet, definitely go there. If you're a numbers person, if you're a stats person, it will break down plenty of information regarding the best decks in each format. Give you coverage of some of the top tournaments in each format as well. Just a great site for great information. All right, well, the most popular deck that we have here within the last 2 months is Grixis Delver. You're going to be seeing a lot of Delver in these deck builds, but what this deck essentially is you have a control deck utilizing, you know, Force of Will, Taxian Probe, Brainstorm, Ponder.
Young
to
Pyromancer.
Yeah, to cycle through your deck to find the cards that you need, as well as playing some insanely valuable creatures, like you said, Young Pyromancer, Delver of Secrets, of course, Deathrite Shaman, True Name Nemesis. But yeah, so you're essentially filtering through your deck, controlling your opponent's actions while playing insanely valuable creatures and just valuing them out of the game.
What, you're not going to talk about Gurmag Angler and how good that card is?
Oh, Gurmag Angler is insane. I mean, you're going to be seeing Gurmag Angler in a lot of decks here moving forward. But,
true.
Yeah, definitely a great deck to build. Now, you are going to be seeing a lot. I mean, they're using the blue dual lands. So, you know, barrier to entry to this deck is pretty high. Underground Seas, Volcanic Islands, Scalding Tarns.
Yeah, it looks to be at around the $3,000.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a hefty deck to undertake, financially speaking. So you have your Grixis Delver deck. Let's head on down the aggressive strategy and talk about Eldrazi Aggro.
What? That sounds like fun.
Why don't you let us know what an Eldrazi Aggro deck does?
Well, from what I remember, your Eldrazi aggro decks usually tend to be mono black because a lot of the good Eldrazis are in black. So essentially you're going to take advantage of all those types of lands that give you strong, strong like mana. Ancient Tomb, City of Traders, Eldrazi Temple, Eye of Ugin, Mishra's Factory, all good cards. All colorless, of course, because Eldrazi are colorless. So you got that Eldrazi Mimic that copies any Eldrazi when it comes into play. Endless one, so you always get to control the power. Things like Reality Smasher, Thought Knot, Seer, Matter Reshaper. Most of these just less standard, but they're using those fast lands to make it work. Then on top of that, they're doing a little bit of control with Chalice of the Void because they have a bunch of cards where they are able to decide on where it's going.
Right. And especially playing against a Grixis Delver deck, you're going to have a lot of one drops playing against. So Chalice on one seems very strong. Just in case you don't know, Chalice of the Void is an artifact, a very popular artifact, very expensive artifact too. Costs XX. It says Chalice of the Void comes into play with X charge counters on it. Whenever a player plays a spell with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on it, counter that spell. So if you Chalice on one, that Grixis Delver deck isn't going to be able to ponder, brainstorm, or do anything else that costs one mana.
Right.
So extremely powerful.
Now, what's really cool about this Eldrazi deck, it's cheap. I mean, it's
yes,
a third of the price of any Delver deck because your expensive cards is held up in like the Ancient Tombs, the City of Traders, and the Chalices. Everything else is like a $5, $10 card.
Right. I had no idea Caracas was still only $35. I thought that thing would have rebounded for sure.
Oh, no. It only had that high price tag because of limited printing.
Yeah. Okay. And then this build of Eldrazi I'm seeing here also is packing an Umezawa's Jitte.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, who doesn't want to throw that on your aggressive creatures just for added value? You know, and it's a 2-drop, so it gets around that Chalice on 1, which is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, moving right along.
Blue-Red Delver.
Blue-Red Delver.
Pretty much the same thing as the Grixis. You're just losing out on your black. They go in favor into the Side Moon, Blood Moon, and they use a little bit more targeted destruction.
Yep.
An interesting deck, though, Death and Taxes.
Death and Taxes. Let's take a look at that here. So Death and Taxes, you're going to be seeing a lot of hate bears, a lot of creatures that's going to make it harder for your opponent to cast spells and interact with your creatures. Cards like Mother of Runes, cards like Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, Stoneforge Mystic to fetch up those Batterskulls and Jitte and Swords. Mirran Crusader is just a house, very hard to deal with. It's got the protection from black and from green. Flicker Wisp, you're able to, you know, deal with your opponent's creatures as well as save your own. And then also utilizing Aether Vial so that you can put creatures out at instant speed. I mean, putting a Flicker Wisp out to blink one of your opponent's creatures that's attacking seems pretty strong, especially if it's a...
Delver of Secrets?
Delver of Secrets, sure. Good example. And then it's also using cards like Sanctum Prelate to prevent your opponents from casting spells. Yeah, just all around trying to gum up your opponent's plan while eventually grinding them out through your own creature's means.
Yeah, and we kind of go down to the bug decks, which are essentially, once again, they're Delver decks. But instead of using burn spells like the teamer color ones or the blue-reds, it goes and favors some hand disruption with Hymn to Torox, Abrupt Decays, Fatal Push for killing stuff. And then, you know, Jace, just a couple other cards for disruption, but still kind of focusing on that Delver as an added card that I'm not a huge fan of. They're using Tarmogoyf.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, sure, he's a 2-drop that's really big. I'm just not a big fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clock. You know, and it's just another thing that your opponent's going to have to answer, and it also draws some attention away from Delver, you know, because if you're running, you know, Delvers and in the other builds with red, Young Pyromancers, you know, those are both great targets for removal, but Tarmogoyf, you can't deny the Tarmogoyf as a clock, because a lot of these creatures that you're playing are efficient, they're small, they're giving you value, whereas Tarmogoyf is just a big beater.
Yeah.
And... you know, with using things like Liliana of the Veil to force your opponent to sacrifice creatures, clearing the way for that Tarmogoyf, and using things like Fatal Push, they're going to have to answer that, you know, pretty quickly.
You're not going to see Liliana in these aggro decks. You're going to see them more in the control decks, which I think is where we should go now. The rest of the aggro is mostly just variants on these decks. Then there's also some crazy ones. There's Merfolk, there's Bant, Burn, Infect, Affinity, Goblin, Slivers. Everything's out there. There's a lot of things you can play, but mostly what the decks are is variants as to what the creatures are with the same removal package, because there's certain removal cards that are just better.
Right. Right. But before we move away from the aggro section, I did want to touch on Burn just because it is so affordable, and if you're looking to get into Legacy, a Legacy Burn deck here. I'm looking at one that took first place at SCG Classic Washington. The total price to buy this deck on, you know, it online here is, or buy it from one of the stores, is $416. That's it. You're not having to run any of the severely expensive dual lands. I mean, you've got fetches, you've got your Bloodstained Mires, Arid Mesas, and Wooded Foothills, but you know, with Burn and Legacy, you get to run things like, obviously, your Goblin Guides, your Eidolon of the Great Revels, But you can also run things like Fire Blast, which is a house when you're trying to close out a game, because what Fire Blast is it's red, red four for an instant that says you may sacrifice two mountains instead of playing or paying Fire Blast casting costs. Fire Blast deals four damage to target creature or player. So you tap out to cast all your burn, you know, volleying that at your opponent's face, leaving them, you know, let's say they leave them at four. They think you're done, and you're like, oh no, just sacrifice two mountains, finish the job, four damage to your face, you're dead.
What about that Price of Progress in there?
Absolutely. Price of Progress is an instant for one and a red. Deals two damage to each player for each non-basic land he or she controls. If you manage to land one of these against a Grixis Delver deck,
they're dead.
Greg, that seems like a beating.
Yeah, I mean, turn three or turn four against them, they're like, okay, I take six or eight. You know,
yeah.
Being able to pay two and deal that much damage is better than a Tarmogoyf.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You also get access to Chain Lightning, which is just one red mana as sorcery, deals three damage to one target. So a target creature or player. Sorry, I'm reading the original text here. And then, you know, your opponent has a chance to pay two red and have Chain Lightning. You know, he gets his own one to deal back to you or a creature you control. And you can repeat this process as many times as you have lands. This deck in particular here ran by Terrence Camella is running 20 lands. I don't know, does that seem high for a burn deck to you?
I mean, that does seem high, but he's also running, what, 9 fetches?
Yeah, and he is running Searing Blaze, which does trigger off landfall, so you're going to want the land, you know, to happen here. This seems like a very interesting, very effective burn deck. And again, only cost you a little over $400, and that's a small barrier to entry in the grand scheme of things to get into Legacy.
You could probably foil out the deck for less than most Legacy decks.
Probably foil the deck out for less than the mana base for these Legacy decks. Okay. All right, and then I'm sorry, I have to do this one also because it will probably be a thing.
Are you talking about Infect?
I am talking about Infect. Do you want to take us through an Infect deck here? A Legacy Infect deck?
Yeah, I can take you through a Legacy Infect deck. It's horrible and you shouldn't play it.
True, true.
No. Honestly, Infect's good. Let's see. I'm going to go and look at the year-end duel for duels at Kick Engines in the Philippines. This is the first deck. First place.
Yes.
And essentially, what these decks consist of is they're usually a blue-green, because blue and green has two of the best Infect creatures, and they're really cheap. On top of that, they use a bunch of cards that are free for them to give, like, pluses. I think one of the strongest cards that you'll always see in an Infect deck is Invigorate, which, if you don't know what Invigorate is, it is... Choose generic and a green instant. If you control forest, rather than paying its cost, you can give an opponent 3 life and equip. Target creature will get +4/+4 until end of turn. So if you put this on a Blighted Angel, you give them 3 life, but you hit them for 5.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. I had a mana open. I'm going to berserk it. You're dead.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's just. You get so much depth. The thing is that you're trying to just find this combination of cards, and everything else is making sure you don't lose them.
Right.
So you've got a lot of expensive lands that you're playing with. I think the coolest card in here that I like is Pendlehaven.
Pendlehaven's good.
Because what it says is it's a legendary land, and it's tapped to add 1 green. Then it's tapped to make a 1/1 get +1/+2. So essentially it means if you have your Blighted Agent attack, you get to tap that and make it a 2/3.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Berserk, again, only a $10 card nowadays, thanks to the reprint from Conspiracy 2, I think?
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the non-mana cards, you're really looking at... your Force of Wills are, you know, going to be about $75 or $80.
Cluster Storm's got commands a price still.
That's true, but thank goodness for that iconic Masters reprint. Otherwise, this would still be up in the like $50 to $60 range.
Yeah.
other than that, you know, you're, well, a Sylvan Library, $20, not too bad.
Wasteland.
Yeah.
Now, do you know why it's running that Wasteland?
Is that to get rid of your opponent's... Well, why don't you tell me?
Glacial Chasm.
Oh, okay.
It is because of Glacial Chasm, because the lands decks and so many control decks, they're going to run Glacial Chasm because they know if you're playing Infect, they need to drop that, which means you're hurting to get that Wasteland.
Right.
And you can't run a lot of Wastelands because you're so color intensive.
Yep. Yep. And then as a backup plan, you've always got Ink Moth Nexus, which is a land that you can then turn into a 1/1 flying artifact creature with Infect.
Oh, man. Does Pendlehaven work on that?
It does. Yeah. It absolutely does.
And Noble Hierarchs.
And Noble Hierarchs, right. To give that Exalt, you know, you're getting in there with, you know, one creature at a time, just trying to slip it through your opponent's defense, if you can even land it in the first place against all this control. And you are running the 4 Force of Wills, which is good. Any deck running blue in Legacy, you should probably be running your play set of Force of Wills. But then also Become Immense, because you are running those fetch lands. You are running, you know, spells like Brainstorm and Ponder, Gitaxian Probe. Right, yeah. But yeah, Become Immense will give you that +6/+6, which in the world of Infect is 2/3 of your life total. So that's pretty huge. Okay, so let's leave this aggro section here. We've talked Infect now. Let's get on into Control.
What? So the top Control decks is Grixis.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
Well, now, they're also... It's also... Four color control is falling into this category as well, also known as check pile.
Check pile. I haven't heard that one.
Actually, if you look here, this check pile deck, it's actually spelled C-Z-E-C-H, like check.
From Draman Legacy. Oh my God. Yes. Is that a Leovold?
That is. Leovold is a proponent of this check pile deck. He's a house. He is really, really insane. And he commands a $45 price tag. Wow.
Oh, yeah. No. That card is busted. Do you know why he's so busted?
Well, he's banned in EDH, so you know he's busted. But go ahead.
So you've got your Leovold out. I mean, you cheated it in. You got it in quickly because of Deathrite Shaman or whatever it may be. Turn two. They go Brainstorm and draw one and put one back.
Well, that's if they haven't drawn their card for their turn yet, because if they do, they just don't draw anything and they put two cards back.
Yeah, no.
Unless they brainstorm on your turn. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. But it really messes up almost every deck, because every deck is looking for those cards to be able to do their things, because decks are toolboxes in Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the other busted thing about Leovold is the whole thing of, oh, you targeted him to destroy him. I'll draw a card.
Yep, absolutely.
So good. The numbers of times I've seen Legacy get played where they go, I'll destroy your Leovold. They'll draw a card, play a Leovold.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're like...
So, yeah, and words. This is definitely one of the most expensive decks you can get yourself into. It's... probably this deck I'm looking at right here is about
$4,000.
This one's about $4,500. I mean, the three Underground Seas are like $500 a pop.
That's Card Kingdom, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we go off what's in between. That's why I say it's like probably,
I see what you're saying.
Realistically, $3,800.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But still, probably one of the most expensive decks you can build. I mean, the mana base is insane. The Leovolds are expensive. Snapcaster isn't cheap. The Jace, the Mind Sculptors aren't cheap. And the Force of Wills. You know, it.
I don't know. Legacy, Jaces have dropped. They've been printed a lot.
Yeah, that's true. It's running about, you know, $65-$70. But it's not, you know, in the grand scheme of things,
$200 he used to be.
No, not at all. Okay, so that's your four color control, aka check pile, and then to kind of simplify it a little bit, streamlining it, you have just plain blue white control or blue white X,
Which is usually seen as Miracles.
Miracles, yes. Which saw a huge, huge step back with the banning of Sensei's Divining Top. But
yeah,
they're still finding ways to make it work.
Mm-hmm. This is mostly a spells deck, and they run things like Gideon to win. They also use... I thought they were using Celestial Colonnade.
Some are. You know, some are, some aren't. I see a Gideon in the sideboard here of this one, but mostly what you're dealing with...
I see one in the main.
Ooh. But mostly what you're running here in Miracles is that Terminus spell, which is the card that can miracle for one white that puts all creatures in the bottom of their owner's library. Mm-hmm. So an insanely efficient board wipe. It's running, you know, Swords to Plowshares for targeted removal. Snapcaster, yes. Counterbalance for consistent counter spells. And then in the absence of top, it's running Portent, which will allow you to look at the top cards of your library or your opponent's library and put them back in any order to kind of prepare yourself for countering your opponent's spells. Also, Soothsaying. It's an enchantment for one blue. It says tap X, look at the top X cards of your library and put them back in any order. Sort of similar to a top, but not as efficient. But still, you know, this deck will counter your stuff, kill your stuff, grind you out, and then find, you know, a win condition that could just be like a Snapcaster Mage, or some of them are running Monastery Mentor as well.
Hmm.
So...
And then you've got Helm Control here in the blue-white also. This is a little bit different variant on Miracles. Instead of running those Miracles cards and Snapcasters, it goes towards Keranos and Helm of Obedience. Helm of Obedience is a four-cost artifact that says tap X, tap it. Target opponent puts cards from top of their library into their graveyard until you get a creature card or X cards, one or the other. Then you put those creature into play under your control, and anytime if a creature goes into your graveyard, you have to sacrifice Helm of Obedience. Oh no, sorry. Whatever comes first, you get the creature and then sacrifice Helm of Obedience.
There you go.
Anyhow, the deck also runs things like Humility, Detention Sphere, Energy Field, Porphyry Nodes, Rest in Peace, so that they never have creatures go to the graveyard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
It's an interesting deck. Strong. It's just mostly control.
Yeah. Yeah. And just moving on down to the next one. The next control deck here that you probably have heard if you've heard anything about the Legacy scene, it's referred to as Stoneblade. Now, what Stoneblade kind of refers to is you're running your Stoneforge Mystics to go and grab your swords, Batterskulls, Umezawa's Jitte, and then control your opponent out in the meantime with counterspells, brainstorms to make sure that you're drawing the right stuff, and Supreme Verdict to wipe the field when you might be at the disadvantage.
Do you see that back to basics?
Yes. Yes,
I do. Is that not a spicy card? If you don't know what back to basics is, it's an enchantment for two generic and a blue, and it says non-basic lands don't untap during their controller's untap step. So, essentially, all those like 3- and 4-color decks get boned.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And you can get away with running... this deck right here is running 2 Tundras, which are only about $275.
And I mean, what do you run the Tundra for? Do you really need that blue mana that quick? Could you not replace those with, like, a Prairie Stream?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are ways to make it work. Obviously, when you're trying to get the maximum total value out of your cards, you're going to want to run the dual lands. But I don't know. With the short supply, people are going to have to find ways to play around it without, you know, using these insanely expensive dual lands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, then you have another deck that has been showing up quite a bit, and that is Lands. Lands likes to play a card called Dark Depths.
Yeah.
And what Dark Depths is it's a legendary snow land that says comes into play with 10 ice counters on it. Now you can tap 3, remove an ice counter from Dark Depths, and when it has no ice counters on it, you sacrifice it and you put a 2020 legendary black indestructible avatar creature token with flying into play named Merit Lage into play.
Yeah. Now, is there a land that makes it so that you can kind of cheat that Merit Lage into play?
You know, it's funny you say that because there is a land called Thespian Stage from, what is that, Gatecrash?
That is Gatecrash.
Yeah, tap to add a generic to your or colors to your mana pool. Tap two, tap it. Thespian Stage becomes a copy of target land and gains this ability. Now, why does this work so well with Dark Depths, Craig? I mean, don't you have all those counters on it anyway?
No, because Thespian Stage enters individually from Dark Depths, so it doesn't enter with the 10 ice counters. So you just get to turn it over, and you become a Merit Lage.
That's pretty savage. Running cards like Crop Rotation to make sure that you can grab that Dark Depths and that Thespian Stage to make that combo happen. Some versions of this, also called Turbo Depths, will run things like Vampire Hexmage to get rid of those counters immediately. I know people have been talking about possibly using Solemnity with this, but bottom line is they want to get this Dark Depths out. They want to get that Merit Lage token out, and they want to beat your face. So it's a pretty expensive deck. You know, again, running into that, you know, $3,500 mark, but very, very effective. Anything else you want to say about lands before we move on? There's your Glacial Chasm that you were talking about.
I gotta say, we gotta turn it up a little quicker on these different decks.
Right. We might just do a legacy. Do you want to just do a legacy breakdown here, and then we can go and do another one?
The next, there's pretty much only two other decks, and that is Storm and Show and Tell, because the other decks are kind of, they're there, but they're not the decks to play. So Storm, as you know it, is about playing as many spells in a single turn as you can. And going to a Modo competitive legacy league, this took first place a couple weeks ago from a Control for Days. He is using a couple. He's got five dual lands, a couple fetches, but ultimately Ad Nauseam, which is a five-drop black spell that says you reveal cards from top of your deck, and based on the mana cost on that, you take damage and you put those cards in your hand. So essentially, you draw up to 20 life or 19 life, so that you still live, or 18 life. And then you go, okay, I play this spell, 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 and uses things like Lotus Petal to get free mana out of stuff. And then once you get like a Dark Ritual off, into a Dark Ritual, into a Cabal Ritual, into all these other cards, you get to go past in flames to cast them all again.
Yep.
Also, you can Tendrils of Agony or Grape Shot or...
Yep. Grape Shot would be the hinge of the modern Storm deck, which we'll probably get to here in a little bit. But
that Tendrils is so good because of the fact that they lose two and you gain two.
Right. So you really only have to Storm off 10 times if your opponent's at 20, and no one's really at 20 by that time. They've either fetched or done some other sort of damage to themselves. But the nice thing is
you get that life back. So if you have mana floating and you haven't killed them, you get to do it again. Well,
yes.
Although this is only running one Tendrils, so... But with a Pass in Flames, you get to cast it twice.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Barrier to Entries for this deck would also revolve around... You got four Lion's Eye Diamonds, which are about $150 a pop. And you've also got your... I don't know. I think it's just the mana base.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond
definitely that mana base.
Yeah, your Underground Seas, Volcanic Island, plus your fetches in the Bayou. How much is Bayou going for now? Bayou's, okay, about $250. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, so you got Storm.
And then you go to your next big deck is Show and Tell.
Yes.
What's Show and Tell?
Show and Tell, also known sometimes as Sneak and Show, highlights two cards mainly, and one is Show and Tell, which is a sorcery for a blue and two generic. It says
each player may put an artifact, creature, enchantment, or land card from his or her hand onto the battlefield.
There you go. Thank you. Again, reprinted in Conspiracy 2.
So good.
It's only about $16 now, so not too bad. The other deck's namesake is Sneak Attack, which is an enchantment for a red and 3 generic, where you can tap a red, choose a creature card from your hand, and put that creature into play. The creature is unaffected by summoning sickness. At the end of turn, sacrifice the creature. So who doesn't want to use that one red mana and sneak out a
Emrakul,
the Aeon's Torn,
yeah,
or a Grizzlebrand?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got backup with Force of Will, Flusterstorm, Spell Pierce.
Control for days. The thing that I find that's a lot of fun with this deck is they'll go Show and Tell and drop out an Omniscience. If that Omniscience lands, you've lost. Period.
Yep. So Omniscience is blue and 7 generic, so 10 mana. So Show and Tell really the only way to get this card out. But it's an enchantment that says you may cast non-land cards from your hand without paying their mana cost. So free Emrakul, free Grizzlebrand. And if you play this first and then you play your Emrakul, you are casting it so you get that extra turn so that you can really wreck your opponent pretty soundly. This deck running just about somewhere between 2,000, 2,500. It does have a pretty pricey mana base, but it's not... I mean, Emrakul is, you know, somewhere in the $40, $45 range. Force of Will is obviously expensive. But other than that, you know, your sneak attacks are about $20 a pop. Again, just the mana base is killer. But, you know, this deck looks like a lot of fun, and it's not that hard to pilot either. I mean, it's get your cheaty spell, put Fatty into play, beat face. Repeat, and then control while all that's happening. All right, and then I know we'd said that was going to be there. We really should talk about
Modern and Standard.
Okay, all right, yeah. Let's go to Modern and Standard.
One thing that you're going to notice between different formats, there are different versions of each deck. So, like for instance, when we go to Aggro and Modern. Right there in second at 7% played, you've got Eldrazi Aggro. Red deck wins. And performing a little bit better, you've got Affinity followed by Hate Bears. Now, this mostly gets rid of your legacy options in favor for modern ones. And it's just mostly different spells.
What do you mean? You mean, like, because this isn't unified. This is going to be you play each deck, right?
No, I agree. But what I'm saying is that, like, for instance, Eldrazi, from Legacy to Modern,
what changes is
instead of them running City of Traders and Ancient Tomb, they're running the Tron lands to get to that fast mana because those other lands aren't available to them. So it makes it a little bit slower.
Yeah.
But still good. When you're going from Legacy Storm to Modern Storm, they add in red and use things like Young Pyromancer so that they can get that extra depth in there.
Right, and you lose out on Dark Ritual and some other spells. Or you also lose out on the Lion's Eye Diamonds. There is some crossover, but yeah, absolutely. If you play it in one format, chances are there's a way to port it over to another that isn't too backbreaking.
Unless you're talking about something like Death Shadow, which is one of those top aggro decks, or Urzatron for control.
Yep.
You want to talk about Death Shadow?
Yeah, and what we'll do for this segment is I feel a little bit more versed in the modern scene, so we'll just give really brief descriptions of these decks as we go forward, because we are going to try to hit as many as possible. So Death Shadow is a deck that its namesake is the creature Death Shadow, which is 1 black for a 13/13, but...
And it gets -X/-X, where X is your life. So if you're at 12 life, it'll get -12/-12, making it a 1/1. So the lower your life, the stronger it is.
There you go. Yep. And then it's using cards like Fetchlands and Street Wraiths and Mishra's Baubles to fill up your graveyard. And then you get your Snapcaster Mages. It'll essentially control you out with the blue cards and then beat your face in with the black cards. So that's pretty much Death Shadow. It is the most popular deck in the format right now, so you should definitely be aware using things like Graveyard Hate to counteract it or you know, things like Fatal Push to take out those Death Shadows. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely a very prevalent deck. Next, we're going to see Eldrazi Aggro, which is a deck that will play things like Eldrazi Temple, which provides 2 mana if it's a colorless spell you're trying to cast, like an Eldrazi, and just put out cards like Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher, which are incredibly valuable creatures and incredibly powerful to beat your opponent's face in. Again, using cards like Chalice of the Void to take out opponents who are trying to interact with your creatures with one-drop spells like Path to Exile or even Lightning Bolt. So a little bit of control, but mostly just beat your face in with large Eldrazi creatures.
Do you see that Endbringer, though?
Endbringer's pretty sweet.
Sweet tech. Yep. Plus, you know, you get to put that Basilisk Scholar in the sideboard if you're bigging with big dudes.
There you go. What does Endbringer do again? That's a good card.
Endbringer is a 6-drop, 5 generic and a colorless. And what it says is at the beginning of each turn, it untaps. So it untaps on your opponent's steps. It's a 5/5, and it says tap, deal 1 damage, target creature or player. Tap a colorless, tap it. Target creature can't attack or block this turn. Tap 2 colorless in it, draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So it allows you to get a lot of depth in those grindy games because you will get them in Modern.
Right, right. Then moving along, we have Red Deck Wins, which can actually be coupled into a couple categories. The first and most prevalent is Burn, which is exactly like the name says. You're throwing lightning bolts and lava spikes and Boros charms at your opponent's face. Pretty much just trying... The biggest, you know, challenge for this deck is figuring out when to burn the creatures and when to burn your opponent. Also using cards like Eidolon of the Great Revel, because while you will be doing damage to yourself, you're also doing damage to your opponent, which is the most important thing. Plus using quick creatures like Monastery Swift Spear and Goblin Guide to deal extra damage. It's pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
What
run yourself
that
against
Naya
your
burn
opponent.
Deck?
Naya Burn deck will run things like Lightning Helix as well. Yeah, there's a lot of variants on Burn, but Burn is essentially a straightforward straightforward idea of, yeah, burn your opponent.
Yep.
Then we have Affinity. Do you want to tell us about Affinity?
What? Affinity? It's a horrible deck.
Again, yes, yes.
Affinity usually uses the advantageous amount of cheap artifacts, dropping out all sorts of different rocks and then sacrificing them to things like your Arcbound Ravager or using Steel Overseer to make them bigger. This used to be an Eggs deck, but Eggs has, you know, not done so well since most of the recent bannings. This deck has stayed the same for quite some time, using things like Master of Aetherium, Seal Overseer, Memnites, Ornithopters, and Signal Pests to make those really small dudes bigger. Yep. On top of that, it does run a 4 of a Ink Moth Nexus, and the most busted card in this deck, Cranial Plating.
Would you say Cranial Plating or Mox Opal?
Cranial Plating.
Okay, Cranial Plating definitely makes the deck hum, because when you put a Cranial Plating on a Vault Scourge with Lifelink, that will actually let you go late game with Affinity. It's pretty savage.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we get into... So we'll say Hate Bears. Again, it's going to be a... The term Hate Bear is a 2-drop. Creature, usually a 2/2, that does something that will prevent your opponent from doing things like Thalian Guardian of Thraben, again, making non-creature spells more expensive, Scavenging Ooze to eliminate cards out of your opponent's graveyard, particularly useful in things like against Grixis Death Shadow, Voice of Resurgence, which prevents your opponents from casting spells on your turn. Well, doesn't prevent it, but you get tokens when they do. Kasali Pride Mage for dealing with those pesky artifacts and enchantments, I think. Land and Arbiter, preventing your opponent from searching their library. Again, Flicker Wisp, dealing with your opponent's threats, and Aether Vial to put all the stuff in at instant speed. And some of these decks are running things like Collected Company to put even more Hate Bears out even quicker. What's next? Humans.
So this is the surprise from an event earlier this year. 5-color mm-hmm. humans. Now, this doesn't utilize a lot of dual lands. Instead, it uses things like Ancient Ziggurat and Cavern of Souls and Unclaimed Territory to get its colors. Now, this is a almost all creatures deck. Yeah, that's right. You heard
yes.
that.
Yes.
And it uses them very effectively. I mean, the highest cost creature is a 3-drop. And it just rushed more dudes out there so you can't deal with them.
And the fact that it is not running collected company just says a lot, again, about how focused the strategy is on purely creature spells.
Yeah, it just rushes out. You drop, like, a Champion of the Parish or Meddling Mage. It just beats up so many decks. So it's good, efficient creatures that do things. Yep. I mean, even from the new set, it's running that Kite Sail Freebooter.
So good. So glad we got that guy.
Which is a 2-drop, 1/2 flyer that makes an opponent discard a non-creature, non-land card.
Right.
So good.
Or exile it, rather. Yeah, but then it comes back when Kite Sail Freebooter leaves. But another really good thing about Kite Sail Freebooter is it is a 1/2 that flies. So it is also pretty threatening, you know, in the right deck when you
drop that Thalia's Lieutenant.
Yeah, it can get bigger and it has evasion. So it's not just something that has to sit there. I remember, you know, the older card Brain Maggot, which did the same thing. That was just a 1/1 on the ground. Didn't really do too much after you played it, but Freebooter is definitely a good evasive creature that you can use on the offensive as well as for its utility. You know, I'd be very curious to see if anybody would ever experiment with Panharmonicon in one of these humans decks.
Oh, gosh.
That would be pretty dirty. If anybody ever wants to do that and actually gets it to work, let us know, please, because that sounds spicy. So then below that, you have three of the, actually it's a wedge and some shards. You have Junk, Jund, and Bant. So these are really just good stuff decks. Where Junk, a.k.a. Abzan, is running white-green-black. Jund is green-black-red, and Bant is white-green-blue. And if you run through each of these three color combinations, you're going to find cards, like with anything black, you're probably running Liliana of the Veil. Anything green, you're probably running Tarmogoyf. Anything blue, you're probably running Snapcaster Mage. Anything white, you're probably running Path to Exile. It's just a lot of the best cards in each of these colors that you shove together into a deck, and it's surprisingly effective. So there's many, many different variants on that, but those will make up a good part of the aggressive strategies that you can play. Moving down to control, we have the most popular control deck here is Urza-Tron. How the heck does Urza-Tron work, Greg?
Oh, it just beats in there with good efficient creatures. But essentially, what it does is it pops out the Urza lands and then it cheats in Emrakul or Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger, Wyrmcoil Engines, Walking Ballista. Ultimately, it's a colorless deck that prides itself on using big creatures to win the game. And then it tops out with things like Karn Liberated for spot removal or Ugin.
Yes. Oh, that Ugin. And in order to get those lands in play, you're running things like Expedition Map, Ancient Stirrings. There's plenty of ways for you to get through your deck and find those Urza lands. So once you get Urza-Tron, a.k.a. Tron, you can pretty much cast anything your heart desires. Then you've got Blue-White X mid-range slash control. These ones you're going to be running, you're going to be seeing a lot of Spell Quellers, Snapcaster Mages, possibly some way to counter spells like Cryptic Commands and maybe even Spell Pierce. Also, Supreme Verdicts, which is the uncounterable board wipe. You can also see a lot of these blue-white decks splashing red for Jeskai. Jeskai is definitely gaining some ground in terms of popularity. And that gives you access to things like Lightning Bolt. And then also Geist of St. Traft is a huge blue-white player as well. Jeskai will also give you access to Lightning Helix.
Is it Jeskai Tempo deck running Jeskai Ascendancy? No.
What cards would benefit from Jeskai Ascendancy?
It isn't. I just remember standard with Jeskai Ascendancy, that deck was busted.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, Jeskai Ascendancy has some combo potential to get really filthy. Blue-white control is your basically your pure control player. You want to stop your opponent from doing what they're trying to do while trying to get in with some value creatures and beat face with your own efficient creatures.
Yeah.
Now, this deck is pretty terrible. You want to talk about terrible decks? Lantern Control. This is a deck that will basically prevent its opponent from playing Magic because it uses cards like Lantern of Insight and Mishra's Bauble to look at the top card of your opponent's library. And if you don't like it, you can use Lantern of Insight and sacrifice it to make your opponent shuffle their library. It's also running Pyxis of Pandemonium, which you can just tap to have each player exile their top card of their library. Its second ability is pretty irrelevant. It's mostly just used for getting rid of your opponent's stuff. You're also running Inquisition of Kozilek and Thoughtseize to take out your opponent's threats, Ensnaring Bridge to prevent your opponent from attacking, Pithing Needle to stop your opponent's stuff from happening. This deck basically just looks at your opponent and says, stop.
Yeah.
And let's just sit here and wait for the inevitable decking or... Yeah, it's a pretty terrible deck to play against, but it is very strong and very effective. So be sure to be packing your early artifact hate like Ancient Grudge. And yeah, just be ready if you see any of these things like Lantern of Insight come down that you're in for a long game. Do you wanna tell us a little bit about Blue Moon to round out this control section for us?
I mean, I can.
Please do.
So your Blue Moon decks, ultimately, is it really just Emrakul the Aeon's Torn tricking? Ah, there you are. That's the answer. Okay, sorry. It's been a while since I played Modern, so of course sometimes I miss a deck. So your Blue Moon decks are blue-red decks that focus on, well, cheating out cards like Emrakul the Aeon's Torn. Because putting an Emrakul the Aeon's Torn out onto the battlefield wins games.
Yep.
This is a lot like Sneak and Show, but instead of having 8 copies or 7 copies, they only get 4 with Through the Breach. Then, just to make things hard on the opponents, because everybody is playing multiple color decks, they're running a 3 of Blood Moon.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Talk about a terrible card.
Yeah.
So Blood Moon just says non-basic lands are mountains, period. Mm-hmm. End of story. All those dual lands, all those shock lands... they're not locked. They're not good anymore.
So they don't really lose out on any of their lands being mountains.
Right. This definitely will. And also you can cast your Through the Breach with mountains. So even if you Blood Moon, your end game is still there. Very much so.
Yep.
And you're running your Lightning Bolts.
Electrolyze. Cryptic Command is probably the hardest one to cast there. But guess what? You're running 7 basic islands, so it's not that hard.
Yep, and again, a deck like Grixis Death Shadow is really only running maybe 1 basic land at times, so your Blood Moon basically just says you can't cast anything
anymore. You're out of this game, yeah.
Yep, so yeah. Blue Moon, anything running Blood Moon is pretty much just going to lock you down, like Lantern, and say you can't play Magic. And then we're heading into the last category here, Combo Storm. So... Blue-Red Storm, kind of similar to Legacy Storm, except instead of Tendrils of Agony, like you said, Greg, you're going to be running Grapeshot.
Yeah.
But another popular card in this is Gifts Ungiven, which says you search your library for up to 4 cards with different names and reveal them. Target opponent chooses 2 of those cards. Put the chosen cards in your graveyard and the rest into your hand. So you pick 4 cards. Oftentimes, it doesn't matter if they're in your hand or in your graveyard because you're running Past in Flames, which will give you access to all those cards in your graveyard.
I mean, one of those cards is usually Past in Flames because Past in Flames works whether it's in your hand or in your graveyard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What about that Baral?
Ooh, Baral has been just gas for these Storm decks, essentially making all instants and sorceries you cast cost 1 less. So you can cast Manamorphos for 1 mana. You can cast Desperate Ritual for 1 mana. You can cast Remand for 1 mana. You can cast Poetic Ritual for 1 mana. So again, instead of that turns Poetic Ritual into a red dark ritual, essentially. So this deck is just going to go... either Baral or Goblin Electromancer, Ritual, Mana, Past in Flames, more mana, Mana,
Great shot.
Opt, grape shot. Draw your cards until you find a grape shot, and then beat your opponent. Which is why a card like Meddling Mage from the Humans deck would shut this deck down, because if you can't cast the grape shot, you cannot win in the first game. Yeah. Obviously, you've got sideboard plans for that, but this deck hinges on that one card of grape shot. So be ready for that.
Yeah.
Very effective. Seen a lot of actually tournament wins recently, this blue-red storm deck. So then we move on to Valakut, a.k.a. Scapeshift.
Or Prime Time.
Yeah, walk us through a Valakut deck or a Scapeshift deck.
Usually your Valakut deck focuses on getting to five lands with a Valakut out and then dropping a number of lands, just busting them out. So it runs a lot of land ramp. Ooh, I like the Hour of Promise in there.
Yes.
Because they could go get like a Valakut and a Valakut.
Yes, multi-Valakuts, because it's not a legendary land.
Right, and then you play something like a Prismatic Omen to make all lands, all land types. It gives you lots of triggers. So like if you get two Valakuts and a Prismatic Omen and you're on five lands, you go, okay, well, I'll do a Bloodstained Mire and then go get a Cinderglade and I'll hit you for, 12?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It just gives you so much extension.
Yep.
And because they get beaten up so much, they also run that Relic of Progenitus. Now, I do not see there's Scapeshift. Okay, so they are running Scapeshift also in the main, which is a 4-drop sorcery in green, so 2 generic, 2 green, that says sacrifice any number of lands and search your library for up to that many land cards. Notice it does not say basic. And then put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
Yep.
Oh, God. Yep, that's absolutely. So much fun. Now, this deck doesn't get played as much because it doesn't have a lot of response. It usually just dies to control.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very hard to run out. But, I mean, when you do have a great series of turns with this deck, I mean, you're talking like turn 2 mana ramp so that on turn 3 you got 4 mana. You may mana ramp again. So that the next turn, on turn 5, you can play your Primeval Titan to get more land, in which case they'd have to remove the Primeval Titan, spend their turn doing that.
Wait, why then would be playing Prime Time on turn 5? I mean, you're probably getting it down on turn 3 or 4.
Well, I'm looking at this right now. I was thinking how soon you could get that done, because all the mana ramp here seems to be two lands, or 2 drops or higher.
Well, I mean, your turn 1 plays definitely Search for Tomorrow, which drops on turn 3 and gives you a land. Then your second turn Sakura Tribe Elder, and you're like, so turn 1 you suspend, turn 2 Sakura Tribe, turn 3 you're on 4 lands, land drop turn that's 5 mana. And then you get your Hour of Promise, go get 2 Valakuts, and next turn your Prime Time.
Or you go with your Prime Time so that they have to deal with that, and then the next turn you Scapeshift, and by that time you've got...
Well, remember, turn 3, you're looking at 5 lands, not 6, so you can't Prime Time. That's why that Hour of Promise comes in really strongly, or Scapeshift even. But you're going to get that one more land that you need to Prime Time and win the game.
Okay, so yeah. Essentially, this deck is just ramp, 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 and then kill you with either a Prime Time or a Scapeshift.
Then moving on from Valakut, you got a Creature's Toolbox, which I don't know much about that. What it looks like is it is green, black, white for some of these. Devoted Druids, Birds of Paradise.
Yes.
Is this Kitchen Feeks combo? Like, this used to be Birthing Pod. This looks like it was a Birthing Pod deck.
There's a lot in this category here. I mean, we've got, you were talking about the Devoted Druid.
Oh, yeah, Devoted Druid Vizier Remedies. Ugh.
Yeah. So the way that works is Devoted Druid is 1 and a green for a 0/2 Elf Druid. Now, you can tap to add a green to your mana pool. You can also put a -1/-1 counter on Devoted Druid to untap it. Well, that coupled with... Vizier of Remedies is 1 and a white for a 2/1. It says if 1 or more -1/-1 counters would be put on a creature you control, that many -1/-1 counters -1 are put on it instead. So this essentially negates the -1 counter on the Devoted Druid. So this will give you a combo to produce infinite green mana. Then you use a card like Duskwatch Recruiter, which will let you look through your deck until you find something like Walking Ballista, in which you can cast your Walking Ballista with infinite mana and then just shoot your opponent in the face. Or you go and you find Aronis the Indomitable, and you then use your infinite mana to make a creature infinitely big with trample and attack in for the win.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
talk about busted.
That is pretty busted. Pretty popular recently.
Yeah, it's really popular. The next deck that I would suggest we talk about in Modern is Dredge.
Yes.
Which is a combo deck which uses things like Life from the Loam, Insolent Neonate, Prize Amalgam, Narcomoeba, and I don't see Bridge from Below anymore. Bridge from Below Band?
No, you got Bloodghast. You've got, yeah, your Faithless Looting.
Essentially, you're discarding creatures to your graveyard to dredge them back up. Stinkweed Imp, because a lot of these cards, they can work whether they're in your graveyard or in your hand.
Right, and what Dredge does, if you're unfamiliar, so it's Dredge and a number. So in Stinkweed Imp's case, it's Dredge 5. And it says, if you would draw a card instead, you may put exactly 5 cards from the top of your library into your graveyard. If you do, return this card from your graveyard to your hand. Otherwise, draw a card. Now you're thinking, why would I want to put a 1/2 flyer back in my hand that I'd have to then cast again for 3 mana and put 5 cards into my graveyard? Why would that benefit me at all?
I don't know. Well, maybe it's so you could put things like a Narcomoeba or a Bloodghast or Scourge Devils from there into play.
True. Right. Because you said Bloodghast, Narcomoeba, Prized Amalgam, Scourge Devil all can enter the battlefield from your graveyard.
Well, Prized Amalgam can't, but...
True. Well, Bloodghast can too. But you... essentially, yeah, you load up your graveyard with these creatures that will enter the battlefield when something happens.
Yeah.
And you make that happen. And then you just have an army that comes directly out of your graveyard. So the higher the dredge number, the more you can put in your graveyard, the faster your deck can function.
I love Manaless Dredge in Legacy.
Ooh. Yeah, we skipped that one, but that definitely is a very potent strategy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then one last combo deck. I know Elves is in here, but Infect. What's Infect do in Modern?
Ooh, well, it loses out on Berserk, like its Legacy counterpart, but...
And that Invigorate.
And the Invigorate, indeed. But essentially, the idea is still the same. You want to play your 1 or 2 cheap, Infect creatures, pump them up insanely fast, get in there for that 10 Infect damage, and sometimes even make them unblockable.
Do you see that Shaper's Sanctuary in the sideboard, though?
Ooh, no.
That's super secret tech.
What does that do?
Shaper's Sanctuary is a 1-drop green enchantment that says whenever a creature you control becomes a target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card.
Yeah.
Some may know that ability from Leovold.
Yes.
So that gives it to all your dudes. It's so good. It just gives you a lot of... extension, because guess what? Infect creatures gotta die, and most decks aren't running complete wrath. Okay. So I think that about does it with Modern.
Well, wait. Also, Elves. Let's just give Elves a shout out, because we didn't talk about them in Legacy. If you see a turn 1 forest or other green mana into a Elvish Mystic or, any other type of elf that can produce mana, you might do best to kill it pretty quickly.
I mean, you always kill Birds of Paradise, right?
Yeah, but I mean, Birds isn't an elf, but what the Elves deck does is it also runs a card called Heritage Druid, which says you can tap 3 untapped elves you control to provide green to your mana pool. This deck explodes very quickly. Even by turn 2, you can be dropping elves upon elves upon elves, and then you run a card like Izuri, Renegade Leader, and you use that mana to beef up your elves and swing in for ridiculous amounts of damage extremely quickly in the game.
You know, I really miss the days of Glimpse of Nature in this deck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glimpse of Nature, isn't that 1 green, and you draw a card every time a creature enters the battlefield under your control?
Yeah.
That's pretty busted. And then collected company, obviously, to turbo out even more elves. Okay, so that's going to bring us to the end of modern. And so now we have standard. And standard is energy. All right, thanks, everybody. That's our game breakdown for standard.
Yeah, no, pretty much. If you're going to play in standard, you're playing that energy.
Yep. Yep. And also, we actually have broken down the standard metagame quite a bit, so I think we can actually give that a pass for today. But one thing that we did want to point out is if you look at the standard metagame, 32% of the field is team or aggro, 16% of the field is red deck wins of some sort. So that's 48% in two decks. If you look at modern, you have such a spread out array of decks.
I mean,
you can
to get to
from.
That number, you've got at least 15 different decks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the top deck here in terms of popularity is Death Shadow at 8%. Then you've got 7%, 5, 5, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 6, 6, 3, 3, 3, 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2. Very, very, very spread out and diverse. And then in Legacy, you've got Grixis Delver atop with 12%. But then it goes to like 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 2, 9, 6, 6, 4, 3, 3, 5, 4, 4, 3, 2, 2. Very, very spread out. It's fun to see formats like that, and it's fun to watch formats like that because you're going to get variance with your decks, and you're not going to be seeing the same thing over and over again, which is why a lot of people get a little upset with Standard because they end up seeing the same matches over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, I know that took us a while, but I think hopefully we got some good information out to you guys who might be interested in pursuing either Legacy or Modern, building a deck.
If you have questions, just ask.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so now let's take a little turn here. We wanted to talk a little bit about the future of Magic. So why don't we go ahead and take a look through the looking glass. Yes, the future, indeed. So, Greg, we have seen a lot of product dumped in our faces the last couple of months.
Yeah, we have.
We've seen master sets show up at big box stores. We've seen brand new Planeswalker deck products showing up at big box stores. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is this a cause for concern, and who this should be a cause of concern for, or is it even a concern at all? What do you think?
I mean, in some respects, yes, because as more and more stores carry product, less and less of it will be worth a lot of money. I mean, as we continue moving forward, we see so many stuff getting out there to people, it's just going to be so much like cheaper for people. It's going to start to get to a point where some stores will not be able to open product unless they get it at a discount. I mean, looking at Unstable is a really poor choice for any store to open product in unless they sell online. Because
now, I thought, Greg, I thought that this was a good thing. I thought the price to enter in and buy singles should be low so that everybody who wants to get in can afford to get in.
I mean, that is so correct. But what's going to end up happening with making it so easily accessible as a price market, all your mom and pop stores are going to vanish. So your casual play space there in Fresno for you. Crazy Scroll is one of them. But isn't there another store out there?
There's a couple, yeah. We've got Crazy Squirrel, we've got Blast Games, we've got Collector's Paradise, we've got the Bullpen. I mean, there's a lot
of
places that you can actually go and play.
How many of those stores open product for release?
I can't exactly vouch for all of them. I know Crazy Squirrel opens a little bit, but you want to kind of gauge how much product you open, like you were saying, because if you open boxes and you can't sell those singles for good amounts, then you are essentially losing money, which prevents singles from being, you know, produced and sold at stores, and supply dries up pretty fast.
Even then, it's like if you're hemorrhaging money by opening singles, you're not buying them because you don't have the money to buy them. And then right. now you get out of the singles market and you play solely on doing events, and it puts you in this really, really hard spot as a Magic store. Now, of course, there are a lot of other options to be able to make these stores work, but with all of these sets coming out, it's going to make it really challenging for the mom and pop stores to continue running.
I agree. But now let's take a step back and put a different lens on. Let's look at it through the lens of Hasbro. You know, I mean, Magic and Wizards of the Coast is the second highest producing or second highest profit producing subsidiary that Hasbro has. Well, when they hear word that we have things like master sets that can sell for more money and people will buy them, I mean, why not throw those out into big box stores? I mean, that's just going to make money. Hasbro and Wizards don't make money off of the secondary market. What do they care if an Elish Norn costs $5? Or what do they care if a Horizon Canopy costs $5? I mean, that doesn't make them any money.
You know why they do care?
Why is that?
Because as much as they don't, they may not support it as much. We talked about Wizards community like a week or so ago. What it really comes down to is if they have people that aren't willing to play their game, they are going to lose money. So they have to care even though they don't care. Because if that secondary market gets flooded with these super powerful cards like Elish Norn, Lotus Cobras, Restoration Angels, and Kiki Jikis, you know what? They're going to end up having a lot of people that are just going to win out in games and people not wanting to play. And when people not want to play, that means people aren't buying product. And I mean, I can imagine, I already know of a couple people in my local store that have stopped playing because of the really openness to getting a lot of these cards. And it makes it really hard for a more casual player to play because they're like, I'm playing uncommons and you just played five rares turn one.
True, but I mean, if you're the company who's trying to make money and you're making a substantial amount, in fact doing better than before by selling all this stuff at big box stores, why not consolidate? Why not just, you know, keep your audience buying cards from these big box stores?
Because big box stores don't run events.
Well, okay, that's true. But still, if you're having, you know, other organizations running these big events, you make money off of Grand Prix, you make money off of other big events and stuff like that.
They make money off of any event because their product's being open.
That's true. And plus, there's this huge focus on digital. I mean, if they're going to focus more of their efforts on producing a digital product that actually produces money, now we don't know how much money that's going to make them yet. You know, we've seen things like, do you remember video rental stores?
I mean, there's still one in Alameda.
I would just hate to see local game stores go the way of, you know, what happened to video rental stores, you know, because you can buy singles, sealed product and everything online.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to go to these local game stores. We love local game stores because that's where you go to play. But if everyone's buying their stuff online and at big box stores, then, you know, these other game stores are just going to have to find other ways to make money besides Magic if they want to stay in business. And that's scary. You know, like, it's not necessarily going to be the end of Magic in a paper sense at all. I just think that by, you know, putting out all this product and giving us the reprints that we're always asking for, you know, then...
So I've got a word to say on this. I believe there's a reason why we've had so many reprints recently. And it's because next year is the 25th anniversary. All of this is leading up to Magic's 25th anniversary, and I think once next year is over, everything's going to slow down a little bit.
Well, I don't know if... See, again, going back to that corporate mindset, if you want things to slow down, I mean, why not put as much product out there as possible if it keeps making you money?
I think you don't understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that they're going to discontinue putting out all this product. I think they're going to change gears in the product that's being put out. Because, I mean, we're getting, what, 2 Masters sets in 1 year?
At least, yeah.
Okay, that's high. Now, what if instead of a secondary Masters set, they released another constructed product?
I mean, sure. If you were
the hype's not as high. And, I mean, definitely right now, Iconic Masters... if you've talked to any store owners, I have friends that are store owners, distributors are fire selling them right now. I mean, cost on a box is around $150. Manufacturer rep is like $220. but stores, distributors are selling boxes at like $110 cost.
Yeah. So I mean, they got to move product to make way for the new stuff they got to order, right?
Exactly. So the advent of all of this, they are ultimately losing their profit margins. They're still making their money, but their profit margins are losing. Mm-hmm. So I think with this coming trend, you're going to notice that stores aren't going to buy as much because guess what? There's no reason to. Unless you've got the money to, there's no reason to buy these sets. You buy what you need to run your events, open for singles. Otherwise, you're buying singles from your customers to keep stocking. That's it. There's a store down in Southern California that's recently been repurchased, but they had a great idea on how they did it. They never opened up boxes, but they always had singles because they had a very aggressive buying and selling strategy. They would buy at TCG low prices and they would sell at TCG mid. And ultimately, that meant that you were making more money on it, but your prices were lower than market price. And everybody was happy. They just always had the singles they needed.
Okay. So, Greg, let me just paint a hypothetical situation here for you. We see cards in Legacy and Modern, and oftentimes there's a couple cards where the price gets pretty out of control. I know Chalice of the Void right now is probably, what, $70 or $80 or something like that. But if you're Wizards and if you're Hasbro and you see an opportunity to make these master sets where you can charge a premium for this product and throw it into big box stores, then that's just going to be essentially them printing money for themselves. And
I mean, it's always been printing money.
True. But the secondary market is going to see, I think what we're going to see over the course of time, I guess my ultimate point is that prices are going to go down for singles. Obviously, with all these reprints and stuff, the more common they get, the lower they're going to cost. And you're still going to see peaks and valleys, but it's not going to be a, you know, this card is, you know, $20 this year and $80 at the end of the year because it's so popular. It might be something like this card starts the year at $20 and ends the year at $35 or something like that, which may be more healthy for the format if it gets more people playing the game.
So,
you know,
with that hypothetical that you bring up, I'm going to point it to you. It's not really a hypothetical. Wizards for the past 5-6 years has been trying to create a diverse format of play. I mean, that's why we had Standard stick around in the same blocks for so long up until the release of Ixalan, because they wanted to keep it diverse. The sets weren't leaning towards that because people weren't playing that. So Standard's really a toxic situation right now. But you look back at Modern and Legacy, the barrier of getting into those formats, you're looking in thousands of dollars, and they want to keep your decks to being around the $1,000 to $1,500 range for what people play. So the reprints are going to follow in those formats and those steps to make them cheaper. I mean, we had that Kiki Splinter Twin deck for a long time, and that was one of those decks that changed everything because they went and they're like, oh God, this is really good. Now, Kiki Jikis, I mean, they were like $60 at one time. They're 12. And even if they get played in a major format, they're not going to be that crazy expensive price because of reprints. And they're trying to level out the price, the barrier of entry, so anybody can play.
Right.
And that's why the master sets aren't your standard prices, because of the fact that you're getting better cards to play with in formats.
Right. Right. So ultimately, you know, we're going to see what this next year holds, you know, being the 25th anniversary and everything. There's going to be a lot to look forward to, and we'll see if they produce as much product as they did this year. And yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, it's interesting to see these changes that they're going through, and kind of fun to speculate on, you know, how it's going to shake out in terms of the Magic community.
So
anyway, and then real briefly before we get out of here, there was a couple of new cards that we saw since the last time we talked. The first one that I wanted to mention is a brand new red card from Rivals of Ixalan called Brass's Bounty. So for 6 and a red, you get a sorcery that says, for each land you control, create a colorless treasure artifact token with tap. Sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Greg, what's your initial reaction to this Brass's Bounty possible powerhouse?
Will I play this in a Naya Tokens deck? Yeah. but, I mean, the cool thing is you can play this in Standard with certain enchantments that just say you win the game with a certain amount of treasure.
Revel in Riches,
so,
yep.
It leads to some interesting play. It allows a lot of fun. And in formats like Commander, this card is a red Boundless Realms. How can you not like that? This card makes Storm so much better in EDH.
Yep, and the fact that it is a sorcery, you could, in theory, snap it back, get yourself more treasure tokens. I mean, if this were in a teamer deck, you'd have your land ramp, so you could get there quicker. You'd have your Snapcaster, so you can play it again. You could do your Riku thing to copy it.
Hey, just to throw this out there, what if you also had, like, a Paralyzer, a doubling season?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, teamer, you got your
Swarm Intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even that all that new card, that Primal Amulet and Primal Wellspring.
Yes. Yep. So I think this card's going to probably see much more play in EDH, but if a standard deck does pop up with like the Grixis treasure theme, you know, that would be very interesting.
Yes.
There's one more card on here, Greg, that we should probably talk about. Unfortunately, half the card is hidden. Greg, what card is this that we're talking
it's
about?
It's Captain's Hook. Not Captain Hook, Captain's.
And what does it do?
So this is an artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+0, has menace, and is a pirate in addition to its other creature types. And whenever Captain's Hook becomes unattached from a permanent, destroy that permanent.
With an equip cost of 1.
Yeah. Now, that says permanent, not creature.
Right. Yep. So if you were to put it on Gideon and it were to get unattached, you would destroy that permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he was indestructible, of course. Now, Greg, another very interesting thing about this card is why is the picture covered by half a magic card?
You know what? I think it's super secret information as to what's going to happen in Rivals. This is probably a story card.
I think you're absolutely right. It says buy a box promo at the bottom of the card, so you will be getting this card when you buy that box of Rivals of Ixalan. But this opens the door wide up to speculation for the lore and story of Rivals of Ixalan. I know I have my own thoughts about this.
I know
and
you do.
This, yeah, just to kind of to fill you guys in on what I've been pondering here for the last couple of days is we saw Vraska get pulled from Ravnica, you know, hired by Nicol Bolas to do his bidding, and now we see that she's actually kind of evolving as a character, making new friends and reinventing herself within the storyline.
Yeah.
We also heard between a conversation of between Nicol Bolas and Tezzeret at the end of the Amonkhet story, Nicol Bolas did say, go get Ral Zarek, we'll tell him to get ready, and, you know, so we know Ral is involved in this. I think that he might also be in a Vraska-like situation, because the leader of the Izzet Guild is Niv-Mizzet, and if Bolas goes to Ral Zarek and says, I am your key to getting in charge of the Izzet Guild and taking care of Niv-Mizzet, if you do this little thing for me, maybe Ral's a little bit tempted there.
Yeah.
So he might not be evil. He might just be manipulated just the same way Vraska was.
Yeah. So with that little speculation, I don't have any speculation currently on the story because I have been too busy doing other things. But there is some interesting bit of information. Last week, we talked briefly on what happened with bullying and harassing. There was resolution. The judge community let this out, not Wizards. And ultimately, what it comes down to is the player in question that was bullying and harassing now has a lifetime ban. So he's no longer a part of our community. Thus, he can still bully
and harass. In-person, our in-person community. He will still have the capability to make his YouTube videos and do whatever he wants outside the realm of the DCI. But yeah, it is good to see Wizards doing something and taking some action to ensure that this guy is at least punished in some way, shape, or form. So
yeah. So he is no longer a part of the community. So we can imagine that if any of this types of stuff goes forward, the possibility of lifetime bans will be honestly what will happen. I'm very happy that this was a zero offense ban because there's no reclaiming this. Now, I do hope that this response gets taken a little bit more often with things like cheating. We had events recently where we had a player that got off a 3-year banning who was found cheating and disqualified. He is under investigation currently, but, Wizards usually tends to say, okay, so you did this. We're going to give you the option to redeem yourself. If you don't, we're going to have to do it again. And they use a 3 strikes rule on that. And I think in some responses, 3 strikes is too lenient.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and yeah, again, like you're saying, it's good to see them taking a good, solid stance on this. Hopefully people will see that and react in kind and take a little bit more responsibility for their actions. Because ultimately, that's what we were talking about in one of our previous episodes is, you know, take responsibility for your actions, be cognizant of your surroundings, and just, you know, be kind to one another.
Yeah, we're all nice people. Well, not all. Some of us are rude. Playing Armageddon on turn 5 is rude.
Or playing Lantern Control or Blood Moon, you know, those rude individuals will always exist. But anyway, all right, Greg, we've gone on long enough here. Where can these fine people listening to us find you?
You can find me on nothing. Oh, I mean, sorry, Twitter, Nipplebiter 2000. Or, that is not me. That's another one.
Greg, where can we find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at noobslasher2003.
You can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean. The podcast is at The Win Condition on Twitter. We're at The Win Condition MTG on Instagram. You can check out our YouTube page. We'll throw a link in the show notes.
That's it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks again for listening. And we wanted to remind you guys to head on over to Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com. Check out their product line. Order your unstable products. Order your holiday gifts through them. And use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off of your total purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways because we want to do more giveaways in the future. Mm-hmm. All that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And we will talk to y'all next week.
Have a good day. Bye.